Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, December 23rd, welcome, welcome, welcome on into the program, friends. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Erin, 2025, it was a year.
Oh, yes. And now let's take a look back, shall we? Today, we're talking about the local stories that define 2025. And in this first segment, we'll examine some of the more serious stories, the stories above the fold. And we've got two of our favorite guests to help us with this review.
Solomon Jones is a Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD host. Solomon, happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
And I will offer an equally hearty season's greetings to Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. Lauren, hello.
Hello.
Yay. And so, of course, we can't do this without you, our listeners on the road, at home, and elsewhere. Our questions of the day: which Philly, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey story of 2025 stuck with you? You can give us a call. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, put the comments in the chat.
And although it is not a Thursday, it is our last live show of 2025. So we wanted to end with a DJ of the day. If you know this segment, it means we end the show on a song picked by one of you. And we shout you out at the end of the show as well. Our prompt today is this: what do you think is the song that best speaks to the essence of 2025? Okay, do with that what you will. Email studio2@whyy.org with your pick and your rationale. And executive producer Kevin will pick a winner.
All right. So we're going to jump right in because we have a lot to cover.
Jump.
And 2025 was a very interesting year in politics, both in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. But I want to start with what I think was the biggest story, and that's the arson fire attack against Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. And if you recall, a man broke into the governor's mansion during the Passover season, used Molotov cocktails to start a fire. The governor and his family was inside. They got away unscathed, thank goodness. But this was a major act of political violence. I want to get your take, Solomon. Lauren, I mean, this was a big story.
It was a big story. I think one of the things that struck me was the fact that he was able to do that. I know a little bit about how dignitaries are protected. I live pretty close to the mayor. And so how did he get past her security in order to climb a 7-foot fence, run across a lawn, climb through a window, break the window so there's noise, throw in a Molotov cocktail, go into a second room, throw another Molotov cocktail, kick open a door and leave? How in the world
was he
able to do all of that in order to get into the governor's mansion and do this attack? And so I'm looking at the state police with a serious side eye. Like, how do you allow that to happen? I think the other part, of course, is that this was a person who had struggled with mental illness. He was a person who had some delusions about the governor. I know it was painted as purely an anti-Semitic attack, but I think it was more political in nature in terms of what he was thinking. You know, I'm glad that he was caught, but so many questions about the security.
Yeah. And by the way, the man, 38-year-old Cody Allen Balmer, a former mechanic from Pembroke, turned himself in. He's pleaded guilty this past October to multiple charges. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think this is just adding to the list of acts of political violence that we've seen in 2025 and the normalization of it. We had the folks in Minnesota, the state representative, her husband, who were killed. You have the Charlie Kirk assassination. You have the attempt on President Trump. I think we have kind of, you know, the radicalization has just shifted to a point where it's left the internet and now it's turning into real world set of threats behind, you know, an avatar. It's real world people committing real world acts of violence, and everybody should be alarmed.
Now we're going to go over the bridge to New Jersey. Big, you know, governor's race there. One of the most expensive in history. It started with a big field of candidates, but ended with Democrat Mikey Sherrill beating Republican Jack Cittarelli by nearly 15 points. Big takeaways for you, Lauren?
I mean, I think between New Jersey, Virginia, and just some of the other races that we saw across the country, Dems are walking away feeling very good looking at the midterms. I'm not sure that a New Jersey governor's race is going to be a bellwether for the rest of the country, right? It's had a series of Democratic governors. Chitterelli, I think this is his third time running.
So I look
to the results optimistically, but I would hope that folks don't read too much into it as it applies to the rest of the country.
We looked back at the first front page of the Inquirer of 2025, and the story, the headline above the fold was this: Pennsylvania GOP basks in state's swing to the right. And you could have written the same headline about New Jersey on that day, January 1st, 2025. Boy, things move fast now, it seems like, in politics, Solomon Jones, that all of a sudden it feels like Democrats have the momentum based on what happened in November.
Well, based on what happened in November, they did have the momentum. It was painted as a bellwether for the rest of the country because New Jersey had, of course, as you point out, they'd had Republican governors, they'd had Democratic governors, but it wasn't just New Jersey. It was Virginia. It was Mamdani winning in New York. It was Democrats flipping seats in Mississippi.
And
Georgia. Like, you know, that was major. And so they had the momentum, which really made me question why they gave that momentum away a little bit later on in the year when the government shutdown happened.
We should also mention in the world of politics, this is all leading to midterm 2026, right? And Pennsylvania is an interesting one. I mean, Shapiro is up for re-election. He obviously has his eyes, or I shouldn't say obviously, seems to have his eyes on higher office. Is this, given the context of where Democrats and Republicans are in generic ballots, given his national profile, is this just a cakewalk for him in 2026? What do you see ahead for Josh Shapiro?
I mean, I think we're going to see, I think he has a very good shot at re-election. I wouldn't call anything a cakewalk because Pennsylvania is obviously a purple, a purple
Pennsylvania
state.
Pennsylvania
is going to Pennsylvania. But I think he goes into this race with a lot of advantages, right? He's got a pretty favorable polling. He's got incredible name recognition. I think he's done a really good job at trying to take a moderate approach on some issues so as to not isolate some of the more conservative Republicans in the state, you know, particularly, you know, his positioning on education, I think, has been very middle of the road. And I really think it depends on who the Republicans put up. Are they going to put up some fresh faces, or is it going to be the same, you know, is it going to be Jack Chitterelli for the third time as it was in New Jersey? And, you know, I think he definitely goes into it with a very strong advantage. It's going to be an uphill battle for any Republican challenger, but Pennsylvania will Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania also kind of produced a pope in 2025, if you can believe it or not. May 8th, 2025, Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost is named Pope of the Catholic Church. He takes the name Leo XIV, the first American-born pope. Many moons before that, he was a student at Villanova, where he earned a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics. I mean, unbelievable. I'm still wrapping my head around the idea that the literal pope went to Villanova. Solomon, I'm curious for your thoughts and when you heard the news and as you felt the reverberations afterwards.
I'd feel better about it if he'd gone to Temple. Let's not call Villanova Philadelphia. It's not.
He's infallible. So now Villanova is a Philadelphia school, right?
Solomon's not conceding that.
No, I'm a St. Joe's grad, so how I feel about Villanova.
We're not loving Villanova, but we are loving Pope Leo. I think that he brings some common sense sensibilities to the position. I think in terms of some of the positions he's quietly taken, those have been good. I know he recently dismissed a bishop up in New York who had taken some pretty questionable positions, and he didn't say much. He just did it. And I think that points to maybe some progress for the Catholic Church under Pope Leo.
And I think about, you know, the fact that, you know, you've seen he had a free concert, Pharrell Williams perform, John Legend. Mm-hmm. You had Jelly Roll at the Vatican. Mm-hmm. I mean, he
did not have that on my 2025 bingo card.
It's, it just makes you feel. And then the Catholic Church, of course, is doing commercials now to bring people back in. Yeah. Do you think that under Pope Leo, the church will become more relevant to folks?
Well, I think if you look at where the church has grown and where it's lost members, it is bleeding in North America, yeah. right? It is losing folks. It's picking up a lot of people in South America, in Africa, but the North American Catholic population or practicing is dwindling.
Yeah.
So I think it was a very conscious decision yep. by the cardinals to say, hey, like this is important that we have a leader from North America. I also think it's interesting in the context of like the geopolitical circumstances
Absolutely.
That they chose an American pope at this time. So it's I think, you know, with the last couple of popes, it's been very refreshing, and yeah. folks who are looking to make the church of one of inclusion rather than exclusion, as it is often perceived to be.
Yeah. So next big story, we got to talk about this. SEPTA, every time you turned around, SEPTA was in the news, from the $300 million funding shortfall, service cuts, aging infrastructure, and there's still no solution. Solomon, we'll be talking about SEPTA again in 2026. Yeah,
we will. And you know, that's why I bought my kids cars.
SEPTA. Oh, really?
I mean, SEPTA, you know. There's always a problem, and it's funny because I listened back to an interview that I did with Governor Shapiro in June, and I asked him about SEPTA. I said that there always seems to be a funding shortage with SEPTA. Mm-hmm. There always seems to be a strike forthcoming with SEPTA. There always seems to be some mechanical issue going on with SEPTA. I just think that if SEPTA paid as much attention to its city division as it does to its regional rail and to other parts of SEPTA, I think if everything had the same standard, maybe they would do a little better. I think one of the things that has to go on in 2026 is their police department has to be bolstered. Mm-hmm. They don't have the same number of police officers as they did. They could get the training there, get the experience there, go elsewhere and make twice as much money. So SEPTA has to have those police officers there for 2026 for this 250th anniversary and everything else that's coming.
Yeah. And just a review, I mean, it really was the year from you know what for yeah. SEPTA. I mean, late August, they implement service cuts that got reversed, but they did hike rates. That stayed. Mm-hmm. And then
they got sued.
They got sued to get the reversal. You know, they had to shift $394 million from capital funds to cover operating expenses. Then they have these federally mandated inspections for rail cars that slows all of the regional rail service down. And Governor Shapiro gets involved again, moves $220 million from the State Transportation Fund to help SEPTA with this issue. And then there's this threatened strike that nearly happens. Shapiro again intervenes there to try to get a deal done, and eventually does get a deal done. Yeah. The governor, Lauren, was very involved with all this SEPTA stuff. I don't know if that augurs well or poorly for the year ahead, but what do you see on the horizon for SEPTA?
I mean, unless there is a long-term funding formula worked out, we're going to be talking about this at every year-end show. And what's happening is we're creating a self-fulfilling prophecy for SEPTA to fail, right? We're not investing in our infrastructure, so the reliability of the system goes down, so people ride it less, so the fares are not getting paid, so they have a budget shortfall, so they cut service. They call it the death spiral. And I think, you know, we have to stop looking at SEPTA as a Philadelphia regional issue, yeah. a Southeast issue.
No, and I want you to finish that thought, because part of what my thinking is, as I hear you say that, this was the year where I felt like political will was there to get a solution. I mean, we had the budget impasse that was really like sort of hinged on SEPTA, right, in the beginning, until, you know, there was this solution that wasn't, which is only like, you know, kicking the can down the road solution. But what will it take to get everybody on board to see that this is not just a Philly problem, this is a state problem?
Yeah, I don't know. To me, people look at SEPTA as a transportation issue. To me, it's an economic development issue. It's an education issue. It's people getting to their jobs. It's people getting to school. I think when you have 2026 coming up, and I've been hearing a lot of complaints from folks outside of America saying, I'm flying into the city to go watch a game, yep. and the stadium's 30 miles away, and how am I supposed to get there? And Philadelphia is one of the handful of cities that you can fly into our airport, take a train to Center City, take a train to the stadium, never have to set foot in a car. And we're going to bleed that system. And to me, that's a missed opportunity, not only to make Philadelphia look good, but to make Pennsylvania look good and become even more attractive as a destination to global visitors. So I think folks need to look at this as not, oh, we're punishing Philadelphia, as it's often fun to do when you're not from Philadelphia in the state legislature, but you're punishing the entire Commonwealth when you don't fund SEPTA.
But I think the problem is that there is this anti-Philadelphia bias in the state legislature. I mean, that was the crux of the argument that was made. Like, we don't want to, this is not just about Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Philadelphia gets too much. Well, Philadelphia gives too much. And I think that's the issue, is that Philadelphia is the economic fulcrum of the state. It needs to be seen that way. And you're right. Helping Philadelphia helps the whole state because we're the ones producing the money.
We've been asking what you out there thought were the top local stories from 2025. Nancy Joe says, to me, the top story is President Trump breaking so many laws in our nation and around the world. Allison on YouTube, first of all, shouts out Lauren's newsletter, says she loves it, and then mentions the trash strike. We'll get there. The SEPTA funding crisis, talking about it now, and the Eagles Super Bowl, we will also get there. We have to fold into this whole conversation about SEPTA the fact that there was broader dysfunction in state government this year.
Yeah.
The state budget was many months late, despite the fact that there was not a specific this year budget shortfall, which is usually the pretext for a drawn-out budget process. This year, the money was there, at least in the short term, and yet the state budget was still super late. Solomon, your takeaway.
I think that it's political dysfunction. I think it's partisanship gone wild. You know, Pennsylvania has been described, of course, as Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in between. I like that as much as Pennsylvania is going to Pennsylvania.
I like that line. That's a good one.
But I think I think that at some point we have to realize that we all have to live here.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, if you're left, if you're right, if you're conservative, if you're liberal, we all have to live here. And so pass the budget, man, and stop playing. And and that's what was going on, I think, with the budget this year. It was partisanship run amok.
And so many people lost, I mean, money. I mean, you're like losing money, you're losing time because you can't fight it out.
Yeah,
and
Lauren, your thoughts on that state budget impasse.
I mean, I think we can make it out to be more complicated than it is, but I think in a large part of it was Republicans didn't want Governor Shapiro to have a win, right? Mm-hmm. They know that he has his eyes on higher office, and anything they can do to make him look incompetent and dysfunctional and his administration, they're going to take the opportunity to do so.
Do you think they succeeded?
No, I don't. You know, everybody lost, right? Nobody won, right?
Yeah. Everybody was hurting.
Yeah, it didn't. It succeeded in making him not look great, making the Democrats not look great, making the Republicans not look great. Yeah. Everybody lost.
Yeah. Want to move now to the suburbs for a story that really came to a head in late April, early May. Prospect Medical Holdings closed a pair of Delaware County hospitals, Crozier Chester Medical Center and Springfield Hospital. Prospect had acquired the four-hospital Crozier Health System in 2016. Early in 2025, they declare bankruptcy. We still don't know the final fate of these hospital buildings. Could they be reopened as hospitals? Maybe. But Delco has essentially become a hospital desert. You're shaking your head, Lauren Vitas. What stuck out to you about this story?
Well, this is just another reason why we need to get private equity out of the healthcare system. Yeah. I think we need to get private equity out of housing and out of healthcare, because we saw it with Crozier. We saw it with Hahnemann in Philadelphia. These companies are there to maximize shareholder value. That is their mission, and that mission is in contravention with a lot of the businesses that they buy. So hospitals, whose mission is to provide people life-saving care. To me, those two missions are totally incongruous. I feel for the folks in Delaware County, because that hospital was an institution for so many people, and forcing people to travel further to get healthcare means that fewer people are going to take the actions they need to do to make themselves healthy. Yeah.
Solomon, anything to add there?
You look at Philadelphia, and Hahnemann Hospital is still empty.
Yeah,
years later, and so it creates an eyesore, but I think it also creates an economic hole. Because all of the jobs that were connected to it, all of the businesses around it, there's a little pizza parlor that was on the corner, catacorner from Hahnemann, that's been closed since the hospital was closed. So that's a family, that's a business that's hurt. And it's just ever widening circles of pain. when you don't really take care of your medical facilities that are in your area that serve the people there, I think that the pain's going to be there for a long time.
Yeah. And so we're going to move on now to another big city story. You know, there were several big in the city, but this is one of the biggest. The DC 33 strike lasted 8 days in July, triggered public outrage, threats against Mayor Sherelle Parker, and a broader debate about labor power. 5 months later, I mean, did it have as much staying power or impact as we felt like it was having?
Felt like such
we
a crisis
were smelling
in the
funk
moment.
Yeah. In the middle of the summer.
Yes.
Lauren, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened early enough in her administration that by the time she's up for reelection, and I think she's going to, you know, her opponents are going to say, you know, this is showing how she's anti-labor. She didn't want to pay these folks a living wage. And the mayor is going to pivot and say, I've always been pro-labor, but not at the fiscal health of the city, right? I put the city and its residents first. So I think she's going to spin this as a win, because the union did fold after 8 days. And I think she walked away in the winner out of that situation, if you could say there was such a thing. So I don't see it following her into 2027, should she run for re-election.
What do you think, the Parker piles, Solomon? Is that going to make around?
I remember the Parker piles, but I also remember trash strikes that were way worse than that.
Yeah,
that was
just a fact. Yeah.
That was nothing. You know, I've lived here long enough to remember when there were piles of steaming garbage for weeks in the city of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And so I think that DC 33 wanted their money. Mm-hmm. They were not playing. They knew that they had some leverage with the trash, and they got their money. I think, you know, at the end of the day, the Parker administration showed the willingness to fight. I think DC 33 showed the willingness to fight. I think they fought to a draw. And I think by the time re-election comes around, that's going to be long forgotten.
It's almost like people don't even remember it now, and it's the end of the year. Yeah.
I was going to say, speaking of steaming piles of garbage, we should not leave this one out. Mid-January, the Sixers announced that despite gaining council approval, they will not build a new arena in Market East, and instead partner with Comcast to build a new shared facility with the Flyers at the South Philadelphia Sports Complex. Real quick, your takeaway from that stunning reversal.
I wasn't sure if you were going to talk about the Eagles' offensive playbook for a minute, but Sixers.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's...
That story really dominated last year, but it actually...
The conclusion was this year. Yeah, I mean, I think the Sixers were using that project as leverage against their landlord, Comcast.
We all got caught in the middle.
We all got caught in the middle, and a lot of political capital was spent.
Yeah.
A lot of folks' time and energy... was wasted. And I think, unlike the Parker piles, I don't think people are going to forget as quickly.
Interesting.
With
that
the 76ers.
Yeah.
I think the 76ers, to your point, I think they manipulated the situation to their own benefit. I'm wondering when they're actually going to do this thing down in South Philadelphia. I'm excited about, you know, all the teams coming together and having a complex down in South Philadelphia. They do it in other cities, and it's done well. I was interested to see people saying, yeah, hands off Chinatown. I'm in Chinatown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the same people that were saying hands off Chinatown, these are people I never see in Chinatown.
Yeah.
You don't patronize their businesses. A lot of the buildings down there are abandoned. They're doing bad economically. If the people who cared so much about that arena actually cared about Chinatown, I think Chinatown would be doing
it. And
by
the way, the sort of efforts to revive Market East are ongoing. There is a task force looking at that right now as we speak.
Mayor says,
and one of the big landlords now on that stretch are the Sixers and Comcast. Mm-hmm. They're still involved in this. So we'll put that aside, I guess, for 2026. And before we close this portion of the program, wanted to bring up AI and data centers, which are starting to percolate as a real issue in this region. You'll recall over the summer, Josh Shapiro announced a $20 billion agreement with Amazon to build centers in Pennsylvania. A month later, U.S. Senator Dave McCormick held this big AI summit headlined by another $90 billion in investment in AI and data centers across Pennsylvania, but there was also local pushback in places like Conshohocken and Delaware City to planned projects. It feels like we're starting to see some rubber meets the road. Your real quick thoughts on that, Solomon, AI and data centers.
When I think about data centers, I think about the amount of energy that they use.
Yeah.
And I think about climate change And so the same people who talk about climate change, if you care about climate change and you want data centers, then how do you minimize the impact on the environment? I think AI is another conversation altogether. I think it's dangerous, quite frankly, because with social media and the means to spread lies so quickly, AI only helps in that. And so I think we have to corral the way that it's used and really control the way that it's used so that we minimize the harm.
And these data centers are not generally being built in places like Philadelphia proper, but in the region for sure, Lauren. This is one of those things where I think you're going to see some real back and forth at the local level.
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, their eyes pop when they hear 20 billion, 90 billion, but like these aren't factories coming in employing 5,000 people to put widgets together, right? This is, these are not, I'm not sure these are going to be net positive job-wise in terms of, you know, especially with AI where it's
post-construction,
Post-construction, yeah, I mean, and, you know, to Solomon's point, they are resource intensive, energy, water, things like that. And I think, you know, with inflation the way it is and folks' pocketbooks being as empty as they are right now, the threat of energy costs rising in the Commonwealth, like I would say yes, but very carefully. And I'm not sure. I think we're just kind of jumping into the pool without checking the water level at this point.
And we'll be talking about that for, I think, quite a while. And before we close out this segment, we definitely wanted to recognize some of the people from our region who we lost. Got to mention Pierre Robert, who spent 44 years on air at WMMR. He's a radio legend here. We lost him. We also lost Bernie Parent, who died at 80, one of the greatest goaltenders in Philadelphia Flyers history. I got to mention Michael Days, former managing editor of Philadelphia Daily News. And of course, David Lynch, who went to PAFA, met his wife in Philly, lived here, and was an American filmmaker known for Eraserhead. And we have a little clip.
Yeah, so to take us into the break, let's hear a little bit from the late, great David Lynch himself, inspired by the city of Philadelphia. We'll keep this conversation going about the top stories of 2025 on the other side of the break.
Philadelphia, when I lived there, I can't say now for sure, but it was one of the sickest, most fearful, corrupt, frightening cities I've ever, you know, set foot in.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We've recapped some of the capital S serious stories that define 2025. And now we're going to get a little bit funky. It is time to talk about some of the lighter and stranger local stories from the past year.
And in this segment, we will find out which of those stories made our next guest say, quote, "Why do I have to keep writing sentences I can't believe I have to write?" Stephanie Farr, hello, how you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
So Stephanie writes about what makes Philly weird, wild, and wonderfully unique for the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Yes, and of course, still with us, we have Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD host, as well as Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of the Broad and Market newsletter.
If you want to chime in this hour, we want to hear from you. Which Philly, PA, Delaware, New Jersey story of 2025 really stuck with you? Call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. And you're going to get us going here with let's be honest, really the big story of 2025. The Eagles won the freaking Super Bowl.
Go Birds.
I think whenever any of our teams get into a championship run, you're going to start seeing a lot of weird going on around town. Yes. And this was not a usual year. So I think Mayor Parker started us off with a chant heard around the country.
It is the most
popular chant. School children learn it, I think, in first grade here in Philadelphia. But as we all do, I make mistakes and I hear about it from readers. So that chant, E-L-G-S-E-S, Eagles.
Which I have now seen on bumper stickers and t-shirts, by the way.
The chief clerk's office in City Hall has the license plate with the misspelled chant.
She sent out hats.
That's like open to find. Giants.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. If you thought the National Spelling Bee was brutal, you've never met Eagles fans. And then, you know, Solomon and Lauren are probably better versed at talking about the actual gameplay of the year, but the snowy NFC divisional playoff game was really cool, right?
That was awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's been a while since we've had a snow game.
Yeah.
The tush push, the continued drama around that, in which Dude Wipes then became a sponsor of the Eagles.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a very interesting picture with Swoop and a package of Dude Wipes behind him.
Late stage capitalism at its finest. Yeah.
Cooper DeJean's pick six. And then, you know, as soon as the Eagles won, I don't know where y'all were, but I was on the streets of Philadelphia in Center City with the fans, and that drunken green tsunami just starts coming at you, and there's very little you can do.
That's right.
Fans scaled poles, and they tore them down this year. Mayor Parker chose not to grease our poles, so they were greasing poles in New Orleans, but not here, which was interesting. Partied with Bigfoot, Ben Franklin, Philly Elmo, and then, you know, people set a bonfire in the middle of Market Street, which is always concerning. Mm. But escaped that unharmed. And, you know, there was a point where I remember seeing a guy in a Batman mask with a cape for a towel as a cape. And it was just like I was in Gotham City. And I really, you know, it was...
Same experience, really.
You don't know where the night's going to go. And that's kind of, you know, one of Philly's greatest qualities is this love of surprise.
Yeah. Well, you know, Batman is like a theme for the Eagles. They're skinny Batman. Right. They're swole Batman. And then...
Fat Batman.
So there's a reason for that.
Right. And I have to shout out Gilly the King. Kind of came up with the theme song of the run, which was Blow the Whistle Dance that went viral all over social media.
And it made it so much fun to be a part of that. Yep. And since, you know, another big story, I say it was fun, sticking with sports, is it's a big year for women's sports in Philly. Mm.
Yes.
The biggest story is we will finally get a WNBA team in 2030.
Yeah. I'm just excited to have a professional basketball team in Philadelphia.
Oh, there's no need to go that low. Wait a minute.
But for real though, I think they're going to start play right in 2030.
Yes.
I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
It's
a landmark moment for Philadelphia sports.
And that was announced in June. It'll be co-owned by Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment on the Sixers, mm-hmm. with Comcast holding a minority stake. They're going to play in that new arena that's going to be built down in South Philly.
Yeah.
We're really excited. And by the way, that 3-on-3 tournament from Unrivaled, they were sold out in 24 hours. Philly, are we ready for this?
I think we're ready for it. I love the naming contest. Mm-hmm. I think we should call them the Philly Johns.
Oh,
I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I think John might be overplayed.
It came out in my generation. We made it up, so please.
Once I saw John on a billboard, I was like, oh, it's over.
It might be over.
It's over. The shark has been jumped.
I will give you my preferred name.
Okay.
The Philadelphia Freedom, which is a tribute to the song, which was also a tribute to a no longer existing tennis team that was, you know, but owned by Billie Jean King. So for me, I think that would be a great callback. And the song's right there. You could play it after every win.
So I like the Philadelphia Rage just because that was
our old school
when we had our first professional team back in the 90s with Dawn Staley. That was the name of the team. I say resurrect that. And it kind of goes with, you know, the city attitude.
That's
not a bad one.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the two women's sports bars also opening up in town. We had Marsha's this year, and then Watch Party PHL's Stoop Pigeon. I could also see us being called the Pigeons.
That would be bad.
It's a bridge you don't mess with.
We got some names.
I will mention another story in this segment, which is not as fun, but still an important cultural moment in Philadelphia. Macy's closed its department store inside the famous Wanamaker building in late March. The plans to redevelop that site are ongoing, but it looks like the Grand Court and the Organ will be protected. I don't know, Stephanie, were you on that one, the end of Macy's and the end of that sort of that era on East Market?
Yeah, so I spent 4 hours at the Eagle in the days before it closed, and I was really moved. I knew Wanamaker's meant something to people of Philadelphia. I've been here 18 years. I love the light show myself. I just didn't know how much. I mean, we had, you know, I had a 90-year-old woman come and talk to me in tears, just as this was the place my mom told me she had cancer. This is the place where I met my husband, you know, and just all these stories and connections that people have, and the light show especially. So I'm glad that will survive.
Yeah. By the way, I went down there to say goodbye to the big organ, and it was so packed. And I thought to myself, wow, if people, this many people actually showed up to Macy's, you know.
Right.
Well, the problem is people showed up for the organ, and people showed up for the light show, and people showed up for the Christmas village upstairs. People showed up for all of that. The problem is people don't show up all year round to shop.
Yeah.
And that's why it went from Wanamaker's, and then I think it was Lord & Taylor, and then it was Macy's, and then it was closed. And so, you know, you got to figure out a way to bring back downtown Philadelphia so that these big stores can survive.
Yeah,
I just hope they keep the janky Christmas Dickens village.
Yeah.
It's so good and so terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It was really heartening to see the number of folks. You know, I work in City Hall a lot, and just lines around the block waiting to get in for the light show. So I think, you know, traditions mean a lot to folks, especially around this time of year. So we are fortunate that one of the developers is a local developer who I know cares very much about maintaining traditions. So I'm optimistic that this will not be the end of those traditions.
Yeah. Don't say Philadelphians aren't sentimental.
Yeah.
So now next story, I think you've got one for us, Stephanie, about, is this the Phillies Karen one? Can we talk Phillies Karen now?
It is.
Let's remind folks about Phillies Karen.
Break it down for folks.
This technically didn't happen in Philadelphia, but I think it caught the attentions of Philadelphia much that we can't ignore it.
Very Philly.
This happens at a Phillies Marlins game in Florida, and ball goes into the stands, a Harrison Bader ball goes into the stands. A dad does run out of his seat a bit to grab it for his son, gives it to his son, gives him a hug, and a woman with a Kate Gosselin haircut comes over, mad as heck, and she's like, give me that! And you just see her berate the father so much to the point that he takes the ball out of his kid's glove and gives it to her. I mean,
all caught on camera, folks.
Taking candy from a baby is one thing. Babies don't need candy anyway. What are they doing with candy? But this is something you don't do, especially to a Phillies fan, because the whole
the internet went crazy.
She picked the right one, because if it was me,
my
son, you're not getting this ball. I'm sorry, you can yell all you want.
I don't think they ever identified.
No, she's on the internet lamb.
Witness protection level.
It's unbelievable.
She's in Florida, where she's safer with the alligators than with Philly fans.
She took that wig off and ran.
This is what if we do build that $20 billion data center, I want the AI to find the Phillies Karen.
Please do that. No, yeah. I actually ended up rooting for Phillies Karen, and I'm on the record
right here.
Because no one has ever beaten the internet mob. This is history. Oh. She's the first person to ever truly do it.
Bobby loves an anti-hero.
She is an anti-hero.
And he was like, go, Karen, go.
Run, Karen, run.
Run, Karen.
And what's so interesting to me is that they misidentified her.
Oh, that poor teacher. Course,
and she was like, it's not me. It ain't me.
I wasn't
didn't
anywhere
do it.
Near Florida. I got an alibi.
And now, I'm telling you, all she did was change her hair. And like, no one knows. She's going to be like in obscurity
for
life.
Her.
Yeah.
If that's the thing that finally kills the Kate Gosselin haircut, though, I think in the grand scheme of it, it might be worth it. Worth it.
All right, I think you've got the next story, Cherry.
Oh, yeah. So when this trend started, I had no idea what it was, but I ended up hipping our audience to the game, and y'all probably know what I'm talking about when I do my hands like this. Mm-hmm. 6-7. Mm-hmm. It is a meaningless hype phrase that originated in Philly by our very own Skrilla the rapper. Any ideas on why and how this thing blew up?
So I reached out to my son because I have no business even saying 6-7.
You did your research. You did
my research, right? My son is 21. He said it's a meaningless phrase. It doesn't mean anything, but that it became this internet meme started by Skrilla, the rapper out of Philly. Because the numbers 6-7 just go together. And so people just say 6-7
for anything.
Right. I said, well, what does it mean? He said, nothing. It doesn't mean anything. But, you know, it just became this internet meme, and it just became popular. So kids just say it.
I've always thought it meant something, but apparently it means absolutely nothing.
That's how you know, like we're like that's how you know we're beyond the culture because we're like, well, it has to mean something,
right? But that, but Lauren, that's what youth culture is, right?
Every generation, old people. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, the Budweiser, the What's Up commercials.
Yes.
Like you could not answer the phone without someone being like, "What's up?" in your ear, right? For like
really
2 years.
Connection to that, by the way, I will
years,
say
so.
Temple.
Yeah, the Charles. Chuck Stone's son, Charles Stone III, is the guy behind the
Philadelphia's yes. center
wow.
of the universe.
Yes, yes.
So clearly. Always a Philly connection.
Yeah. So you know what? It's in the grand scheme of like annoying generational trends, like 6'7" is like relatively low.
You
can
tolerate that.
I can live with 6'7". They get such a kick out of it too. Let them have no future. Let them have 6'7", right?
Yeah. Stephanie, what do you think?
I've got nothing.
You got nothing on 6'7"? Let it go.
I'm super late to the game.
I'll bring up another local story. So this year, self-driving taxi company Waymo, which is owned by Alphabet, a.k.a. Google, began mapping city streets over the summer. Then earlier this month, we heard that they plan to stick around and eventually offer, they say, fully autonomous rides to Philly passengers in the Waymo taxis. Waymo exists in other cities, but it does seem like, we don't know, 2026, 2027, it could come. It might come to the city of Philadelphia. Who's hopping in the Waymo?
Yeah, I'll pass.
You're passing, not coming in?
I'm passing because it's not because of the Waymo. It's because of the other drivers. Philadelphia is crazy.
People's
cars are held together with bubble gum, duct tape, you know.
I literally saw someone tie their bumper with an electrical cord one time.
I'm not making this up. I mean, it is treacherous in these streets. And so good luck, Waymo, because they need to look out for us, not the other way around.
Yeah. But you know what? I said that, too. I kind of agree with you, Solomon. Go ahead, Laura.
They got to put Waymo through the test, which is driving around City Hall during rush hour. Wink and Drive.
Oh, God. Ooh. Yeah.
The Boulevard?
Boulevard. Those would be, like, my top three. If Waymo can survive those three, then I would consider getting in one.
Do you think they'll just stick to Center City? Like, I was like, the way they could get around that is that they'll have, like, a little radius in Philly that they just stick to.
It's going to work, guys. You're totally underestimating this technology.
I'm excited to see, like, a Waymo on blocks.
Have you been to San Francisco? Have you driven around San Francisco?
Do you remember what we did in Hitch Spot, though?
Have you been to Kensington?
I'm just saying, man. This is the craziest landscape you could imagine.
I think somebody's going to hijack a Waymo. Like, they tried it in L.A. They got caught. But I'm like, in Philly, they're going to be successful. They're going
to
hijack
Waymo. I hate to break it to you guys. Waymo's coming. It's here to stay. You will all. I'm going to make a prediction. Every single person at this table will have ridden, make at least one ride in a Waymo within the next 5 years.
If Waymo can make it in Philadelphia, Waymo can make it anywhere.
Maybe we can wedge in one caller.
All right, let's say Kim from Atlantic City wants to chime in. All right, Kim, what do you got for us on Studio 2?
Yeah, so I heard you guys talking about 6 and 7 doesn't mean anything, but in The Wiz with Diana Ross, there's the Good Witch where Diana Ross lands in the Oz. And so she's frazzled. So the good one says, don't be all 6s and 7s. So it does have a meaning. Get upset. Don't get frazzled.
I like that. I do like that.
Kim Sterling knew that when he put it in there.
Thank you, Kim. First of all, I'll just say Skrilla is not on the record as that being the explanation of what he was thinking about when he wrote this. I have seen him say that it's possibly a reference to a neighborhood affiliation in a part of Philly where some of his family is from. Not Kensington where he's based now, but I think far west Philly, there's maybe a 67th Street or 67th Avenue, and he has hinted that perhaps it is a reference to that. Although, again, if you have heard him talk, his references tend to be oblique. I'll just put it like that.
He's the Socrates of our time.
Yes.
He's trying to unpack.
Exactly.
I just love how many of us has put so much time to thinking about what 6, 7 actually means. So we have another story.
Yeah, let's get up. So, Stephanie, you're back on the clock here. Okay. We want to talk about the Philly Zoo and the great tortoise explosion of 2025.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite stories of the year. It's just joyful. There's nothing wrong about it. It's weird, but it's great. I mean, and also how often do a couple of nonagenarians have 16 children? So this was mom.
Not often.
Wild. Not often. 90
Leave
plus.
It to Philadelphians. We'll find a way. Mommy and Abruzzo are Western Santa Cruz Galapagos tortoises that have lived at the zoo for a very long time, and they made history with two clutches. The first in April with 6, and then the second in August with 9. So they have 16 babies between them. This is really helping the species. It's a critically endangered species. And Mommy is the oldest known first-time Galapagos tortoise to have children in the world. So.
Drop those babies at 90, yo.
That's right. Yeah, Grandma that's and real. Grandpa that's busy.
It must have been, it must have been an incredible push present.
What was that gift?
But people were pretty like inspired, I think, by this story. Like people were like into this story, Stephanie. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's new life. It brings hope.
Life. I love it.
They're adorable. You know, you wonder about the physics of it all and how it works. But it's really beautiful. And the zoo is happy, and to really help out the species that so critically needs it. Plus, Now we have another Ecuadorian along with our most famous Ecuadorian resident here in Philadelphia, the Fanatic.
The Fanatic, yes, who is from the Galapagos Islands.
From the Galapagos
I didn't think
as well.
About that connection.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so you said that story gave us life and inspiration. Let's go to a story that will do the exact opposite. This was the story about which Stephanie Farr wrote, "Why do I have to keep writing sentences I can't even believe I have to write?" Stephanie Farr, we cannot finish this review. 2025
without talking about
the Delco pooper.
Please break this story down, because
here we go.
Some people might have heard of it, but they don't know the blow by blow.
As I've tried to get in the paper several times and my editor won't let me. This is the most absurd story of the year.
Yeah, I wanted to wipe the whole thing.
Yeah, oh, my memory. Gosh. Yeah, yeah. So this is another kind of tush-push that we dealt with this year.
How many puns are coming?
So many. This was caught on camera. In broad daylight in Prospect Park, Pennsylvania, there is an alleged road raid incident between two drivers. One woman gets out of her car and goes to the hood of the driver behind her in broad daylight and has a potty, let's say. I don't know what I'm allowed to say.
Drops trout.
She had stomach issues, apparently.
I don't know, because she tells police, you know, afterwards, I want to make sure I get this quote correct. I wanted to punch her in the face, but I pooped on her car instead and went home, according to the affidavit. And then she later told police.
Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
There you go.
Quote, it was a clean poop. I didn't even have to wipe. And
There is no such thing.
Unless you are actively seated on a bidet, there is no such thing as a poop that doesn't need to wipe.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But this teenager catches this whole incident on camera. It drops on Facebook.
Yeah, there was a lot of eye contact, too.
There was a lot of smiling when she was done. She looked very satisfied with herself. Yeah.
Wow. And she said, ha, laughed. And she had her, like, you know, arms, you know. I just loved your story. I read the whole thing, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. She was handcuffed, like, cackling, walking down the street.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I've covered Delco for 18 years, and a lot, you know, the crime in the suburbs tend to have more panache, I think. And this is one of those instances.
You would call this panache?
I would call it something else that I can't say.
What was she charged with?
So she was charged with indecent exposure, depositing waste on a highway.
I didn't know that was in the criminal code.
That's an actual crime. It's on the books.
Usually they're talking about trash, not actual human waste.
The poor ADA having to go through the criminal code to figure out like what to charge this lady with.
The preliminary hearing was unlike anything I've ever attended. I mean, we're all, even the teen who took the video, his mom's sitting in the gallery trying not to laugh as her son's testifying
at
the hearing, because it's all just so unbelievable. I mean, this is a county where they have flower sales for Mother's Day at the local strip club, and this even like goes beyond anything wow. that I've ever seen in Delco.
All right, Delco.
Yeah. Delco's going to Delco. Pennsylvania's going to Pennsylvania. Yeah. Delco's going to Delco. We actually have a caller. So for I don't know why this is the thing people want to talk about, but David from South Philly wants to talk about 6-7 one more time. David, you're the last live call of the year on Studio 2. You have about 30 seconds. What's your theory on 6-7?
Well, I actually don't know if it's connected to this, but there's a reference to 6-7 in an early Rolling Stones song, Tumbling Dice, where they it's actually kind of a saying about bad luck, right? They're talking about drawing sixes and sevens and nines if you're having bad luck. Now, I kind of like what the young people have done with it. They've made it into kind of a positive thing.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You know, it's just like 6-7 doesn't have to mean anything. It's just fun.
All
and
right.
We need a lot more of that in this day and age.
All right, David from South Philly.
You know what? I got to clap it up for David. We're bringing that home. That was well done.
Like, I love
drew
it.
A message, a theme out of it. Well done,
and left it on a high note. Mm-hmm. By the way, we got a couple honorable mentions as we wrap up the show because homicides at a historical low. We had zero homicide summers in both Camden and in Chester, the city of Chester. They Kata Scott case, tragic case, but they actually made an arrest. And there's been an unusually high clearance rate in the PPD.
Yep.
I mean, got to mention that.
Got to mention it. I think you also have to mention that there are a lot of people in the community who are working to end gun violence. A lot of people who are working in different ways to do it. I run a nonprofit, Man Up PHL, that mentors young people. There are people who are working with those who come home from prison, those who, you know, keeping people from going there in the first place. I just think that the community needs to get a shout out for a lot of the work they're doing around gun violence.
Yeah, absolutely.
A couple other stories we wanted to mention before we close. The opening of Calder Gardens on Benjamin Franklin Parkway, great new museum-ish facility that hopefully people will visit over the years. That was a big deal, made national headlines. On the other side, not a great year for the Philadelphia Museum of Art / the Philadelphia Art Museum. A lot of turmoil there. So cultural institutions heading in different directions, I suppose. Also, the SS United States, the big ship, down outside IKEA, finally did pull out of Philadelphia seemingly
gonna get sunk,
forever.
Maybe?
Yeah,
probably going to get sunk.
It's going to be an artificial reef. It's going to be great.
Off the coast of Florida.
Yeah, which feels like an apt place for the United States to end.
Oh, boy, that's Stephanie Farr bringing it right till the closing moments. Stephanie Farr works for The Enquirer and covers everything. What's the tagline? Weird, wild, and wonderfully unique about the city of Philadelphia and the region. Thank you so much, Stephanie,
thank
for your
you.
Time. I also have to thank, of course, two of our favorites, along with Stephanie, Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD host. Thank you for your time, Solomon.
Thank you.
And Lauren Vitas, government relations professional and author of Broad and Market, a weekly newsletter covering city council. Lauren, always a pleasure.
Go Birds.
Go Birds. Yes. That's how you end the show.
And
go
now Birds. It is time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Hit it. And that's I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones from their 1978 album Road to Ruin. And that's how...
Paulina S. from Elkins Park thought that was the song that summed up 2025. And apparently our executive producer, Kevin McCoury, agrees. Kevin, let's have a talk, buddy. So thank you, Paulina S., for being our final DJ of the day for 2025. We're going out the way we're going out, folks, with I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones.
All right. And I got to say thank you to our producers. We couldn't do what we do without them. Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan, Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Diana Martinez, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCoury, who picked this song, by the way. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And in 2026, I want to say I want to be elated. How about
yes,
that? I'm Abby Wolf
Barron.
Happy
New Year,
y'all. We will talk to you next year.